to another edition of Bikes, Burpees, and Backhands. This is your host, Dave Matthews, here with an updated Australian Open. We're only about 4 days into the tournament, and implosion has occurred on several different levels. Hope you'll listen in on this podcast. We're going to go over several subtopics about the Australian Open. Number one, is there a Netflix jinx? Referring to the Netflix miniseries out now. Number two, are players getting equal rest time throughout the tournament? Number three, equal pay for men and women. I hope you'll stay tuned to this podcast. There are thousands of others out there. Hope you'll stay tuned for the rest. Hold on. Welcome back. First and foremost, being a former pretty good tournament player, I would think. I saw this before the Australian Open started. There were numerous men and women playing, or not playing yet, but saw the draws come out, and all of a sudden they're complaining about, you know, tough draws, first round draws, da 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 da. I get it. I do. Been there, seen that, done that. Unfortunately, in our day and time, a lot of what used to happen, which made it, I think, better, but you can always weigh in on your end of the comment section. You can always comment if you go to Spotify. They give you a place to send me some comments. Back in the day, and I don't know if they do it anymore. I know they were trying to, but I think they kind of got manhandled by the ATP and the WTA. Now, no one really is wanting to accept, I don't want to say it's responsibility, because Wimbledon was the last to do it. They used to do their seedings based on A, past champions, B, has the past champion or champions been playing and the level of their skill at the moment, you know, to do the seedings. And that didn't always, but, and also take into account that they were also seeding for a grass court tournament, which certain players play a little better on grass. Their game lends to the better speed and the bounce, and they adjust better. And so that made Wimbledon an abnormal tournament, but yet the seedings generally held up pretty darn well. Well, in this modern age of nobody wanting to be held accountable, our governing bodies have gone to that route, to where the point system, just like in junior tennis and everything else, you are very rarely toward the semis and finals of tournaments. It's getting to where you are getting, it gets rarer and rarer to get the top seeds out at the end. Now, does parity have a lot to do with that? And, you know, the size of the purses and everything? Yes. No doubt about it. You're going to have, you know, I call it, my players always hear me call it the red meat effect. It's great when you get to the top of the mountain, like a Federer and a Djokovic and a Murray at one time, and on and on and on. It's great when you get up there, but to stay there, it takes an abnormal person to stay there, because somehow they, from inside, are still hungry to get nearer to their perfection level. And I don't know if anybody ever gets there or ever obtains it. You just get closer than everybody else in the field. And that's what separates you over and over. Djokovic, to me, right now is at that level. Even though he played a very limited schedule last year, to come out and win the World Championships in London, I think it was in, November or so, and to still come out And then you're going to go into Australian Open and you're going to, I'm sorry, let me see, make sure I get it right. And you're going to seed him like four. I think you've lost your ever-loving mind. I'm pretty sure that's what I saw. Yeah, he's seeded four. Well, number one and two are already gone. Nadal got beat down by a very good player. I saw that match the other night, lost some sleep over it. Mr. McDonald played a great match. First two sets were lights out. I mean, Nadal's bringing it all. And then age, injury, whatever, creeps in. So Mr. McDonald has got himself a nice draw, nicer, but it don't get easier in men's tennis. The parity is so high. I'm just going to go down really quickly the third round matches. McDonald and Nishioka. You got Kachanov and Tiafoe in the second round of 16 match. You got Hurkacz and Shapovalov, two seeds, Korda, Medvedev. That's going to be a tough one. Tsitsipas, Griekspoor beat the number 32 seed, Vandenskulp. Fuchsovic, some seed got beat really early there. He's going to play center. Norrie's going to play Lecheka. Then you're going to have Grundulo versus Alger Alassim. Rublev and Daniel Evans. So you got some seeds there, still there. Umbert and Rune, Demonour and Bonzi. Dimitrov playing some good tennis. He's going to play Djokovic. That's going to be a really good one. You got wild card Popperin, who just beat Taylor Fritz, and playing Mr. Shelton, son of Mr. Brian Shelton, who I know. Jay Wolf is playing Mo, who's a lucky loser, who beat Zverev last night, 6-2 in the fourth. Then you got Murray, who looks like he's going to beat Kakanakis. Both of them unseeded, but Murray, who beat, oh my gosh, first round, big time match. Let me see who that was. I'll make sure of that one. Murray beat. Gosh, it was a good match, too. I saw that. Oh, Berrettini. That's who he beat. So you got some good matches, and then down at the bottom, you're going to have, at the final, you're going to have Murray. It looks like Murray's going to beat Kankanakis. He's going to play Bautista Agut, who's got a good chance against him. Tommy Paul and Brooksby. So Brooksby just beat Casper Ruud last night, 6-2 in the fourth. So you got a lot of parity there. I'll be right back to go through the women's draw. Welcome back on to the women's draw. Well, we'll see a few big upsets, just like we saw in the men's. You got Swiatek is into the third round. Pretty easy win. She's going to play a qualifier. You got Rybakina, who's a 22 seed, going to play 13 seed Daniel Collins. You got Bandel is playing Ostapenko, number 17 seed. You got Goff's going to play Para. You got Pegula, number 3 seed, versus Kostyuk. You got Krejcikova versus Kalinina. That's number 20 seed is Krejcikova. You got Madison Keys and Azarenka, 2 seeds. Old veterans there. You got Zhu and Sakkari, the number 6 seed, playing the next bracket. Gracheva and Pliskova, number 30 seed. Pliskova's had sights on a Grand Slam for a long time. It's going to be interesting to see if she can perform. Then you got Zhang and Valnets, a qualifier versus a 23 seed in that round of 16 or third round. Then you got Lynette and Alexandrova, number 19 seed. You got Siegmund and Garcia. Garcia's been playing some really good tennis. You got Sabalenka, good player, versus Mertens. That's going to be a really good one. Georgie and Bencic. You got two more seeds. Perizas, Diaz, and Vekic. two unseeds. Then you got Fruhirtova versus Vondrousova, two unseeds. Number two seed Jabeur got beat last night, 6-1 in the third. So here we go again. I think some of your top seeds are still there. I mean, 1 and 3 are still there. 2's out. So, you know, here we go again. Predicting hard courts, like here in Australia, is a little more of an, I don't want to say an easier time, because parity definitely throws a lot of that out the mix. But yet you would think even men's and women's tennis, and I will say playing 2 out of 3, you get more upsets than you do in a 3 out of 5 format, because 3 out of 5, pretty much, generally speaking, the match is going to change in a, let's say, a 4 or 5 set match. The match is going to change dynamics probably 3 or 4 times in that, at least twice, sometimes 3 or 4 times in that 4 or 5 set match. If somebody's just outclassed, then it's 3 sets, we're out of here. But in a 4 or 5 set match, that the dynamics of that match could change several and up to 3 or 4 times, based on the length of the match. And you generally are going to have your stronger, more seasoned players that are more prepared for that than your new up-and-comers. And so that's why you're generally not going to get as many upsets, generally, in the 3 out of 5 versus the 2 out of 3. But it looks like this year, they kind of either threw that out the window. I'll be right back to go into our next topic. Welcome back. I'm going to try to dive into about 2 or 3 different subtopics here. They all kind of funnel in together. First and foremost, like I said, you can always go to Spotify and leave me a comment. I will give you a shout out. Might even send you a Bikes, Burpees, and Backhands t-shirt, 2023 edition. Number one, should the tournaments, the Grand Slams especially, but even you could go down to the Series 1000 tournaments, because most of your top, I would say most of your top 64, or say, let's say 75, your top 75 players, men's and women's fields, those are the ones that are going to really peak for the Series 1000s and the Grand Slams. Should those tournaments be allowed to seed, like, with their own committee, based on the surface, based on the players of last year that came in and how they are playing coming into that tournament? Or should just the rough point system be done, which has been kind of what's been happening for, several years, I guess. I like the old days where Wimbledon, and Wimbledon is a rare thing, once a year kind of thing, or there's a couple other tournaments, but that one especially, does kind of do their own thing. And I don't know if that's changed now. I think it has. And I think it you should give the tournament director or a tournament committee let them, because they get all the sponsors and everything, and see how that works out. It used to work out pretty darn well, because tournament directors could take into account, if player A played 3 weeks ago and played really well, and he's playing pretty well coming in, but he takes a little time off, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. He's getting fresh, getting ready for your tournament. But, to have somebody else sneak in there and beat him out of a few points at a weaker tournament, that doesn't mean he's better. It just means he got a few more points. And that, I think a lot of the organizations that went away from doing that, it's making players play more. Can you overextend and overschedule yourself in this day and age? Oh, absolutely. One of my big things this year in 23 is to watch, is to see, not only upsets, but also injuries. When you're forcing players to play, and I know you can't force them, but the money is so big, you don't know when a crash is going to hit, and all of a sudden title sponsors are running out the door the other way, and then there's no money to be made. Well, welcome to the world of yesteryear tennis when it was on a boom and players were playing because they loved the sport. They were making money, but is inflation everything part of it and times part of it? Sure, absolutely. But like I saw the Australian Open, prize money was like, oh my God, 3 point something million. Oh my God, to the winner only. Could there be a little more parity in the pay? Sure. So anyway, I think I like the idea of the tournament directors and a committee of that tournament doing their own seating. Please give me a shout out or a comment in the comment section. Let me know what you think. On to our next subject. Number one was I saw Andy Murray beat Berrettini in 5 long sets. The first round, probably 4+ hours playing. And he had to come back literally, I think it was within a day or a little over 24 hours later. And that's unfair. I don't care how you look at it, how you shape it. At that level, in a 3 out of 5 set match, every player should be able to be given at least 36 hours, close to 2 days. Usually it's every other day you plan on playing. And I don't think Andy is playing doubles. So, to ask him to come back the next, night or so, that's a little out there. Or, like I said, it should be at least 36 hours rest. But here's the other thing is you know in a tournament format, there's two things, and sadly, one of them, it is undoable. But we as our society have learned that the God Almighty dollar is the driving force, and that's the reason a lot of times why they'll ask somebody like a big, like a Djokovic or Nadal or somebody, they'll ask them to come back. If they have a night session, then all of a sudden the next day session, they get rained out. They'll try to put those premium players, in the stadium courts, and you're only going to get so many matches played with 3 courts. Like down under, they got 3 courts that are covered. You're only going to get so many matches when you got men and women. We're only in the 3rd or 4th day of the tournament. You got 50, 60, 70 matches a day to play. You can't get but so many done on 3 courts. End of story. So somewhere in there has to be an underlying understanding that we're trying to create an equal environment for all players to be treated equally so they get the at least equal amount of rest time. And you got to throw the money out the window. And when I say the money, I'm talking about the sponsors that are not really sponsors. It's the TV promotion. What you need to start doing is if you want to, at your local level or regional level, if you want to show matches of your home players, in Japan or in Germany or in America or in Australia or wherever, you want to show those players of yours, show a tape replay. Yeah, people might have heard the score. I would still watch my player if it was a play I wanted to watch. I'd still watch them play the match on a replay. I do that a lot on streaming anyway. So that you need to get away from. People are going to watch the players they want to watch anyway, no matter if they know the score or not. I will. But anyway, I'm a diehard tennis fan anyway. But that's my take on the rest stuff. I know some of these players down there right now are getting treated really, really unfair from the rest standpoint, and that's not good because you're risking a lot of money in the player getting hurt because then you shut him down and it's terrible. That's just my take on it. You got to give the players equal amount of rest time. Throw out the TV watching the players live. That crap's got to go. You got to let them have equal rest time. Whoever's on the court at the time, show them. And then put the tape replays back up on streaming and people will watch it. Anyway, hold on. Last but not least, this one's kind of an interesting one. Back in my day when you would see players, and this was all players of all sports. It did not matter. You know, there was no streaming. There was no 24/7 sports channels like ESPN, things like that. You had these magazines that, you know, they had photographers take pictures, all this stuff, and that was the way you got a lot of your information. Well, at one point in the history of sport, Sports Illustrated was a publication that was like the sportsman's Bible, sportswoman's Bible. Anybody in sports, that's where you gotcha. And it was a decently thick publication. You know, when it was produced, it came out, and good, you know, writers and photographers had good pictures. Me as a young man, your boy growing up, Sports Illustrated was the sportsman's Bible. And coming along with that, over a little period of time, it became known as the Sports Illustrated Jinx. When you would feature somebody like a Novak Djokovic or a Federer or somebody, oh, you know they were going to get put on the front page, the cover of Sports Illustrated. So you then, because, you know, you got to be careful when you're doing things like that, you start getting, you know, I don't want to say big-headed, but it does. It gives you a little more of a feeling about yourself, and to not pay attention to it is kind of inhuman, but it happens. And so now with Sports Illustrated kind of off and gone in the wings, you have this new video series called, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to leave it up. It's a Netflix series. And it just released just before the Australian Open. And now we're starting to see repercussions, and people talk about the Netflix jinx. I think, you know, this is just my take. I think as a tour player, and I've got several of my friends that were tour players that I never made it quite up that level. And maybe that's a good thing. But my thoughts on being at that level, and, you know, there is a certain level of what people don't know is, I don't want to say good for them, but it's not needed. That's the simplest way I can put it. You know, what I used to do to get myself to the level, was it wrong? No, it wasn't wrong. Nothing wrong about what I did. I've known players or two that have done steroids or whatever, and that's their prerogative. You know, if the governing body doesn't want to create a safe place of equal play, then the governing body has the problem. I have my choice to decide whether I want to go the route of a lot of people. You know, like in sports, you all of you know of old Mr. Lance Armstrong and his run down that road. And I can't say I blame him. I can't say that I agree with what he did. But for the governing body to use him as a scapegoat when you've got in a race like the Tour de France of 190 riders, and you've got 100 of the top 100 are all doing EPO or some form of enhancement, I think the governing body has a problem. I think you have to clean out that whole system and start over and say, are we going to race clean or not? And if we are, how do we stop it? Because everybody and their mama knew how to get around all the testing. What a joke. So you got to figure out a way to test either more or at a better time so that it can be caught. And that's my thought on that part. The Netflix jinx now, as it's being known, is kind of interesting because a lot of players that are on there, they're having trouble. And, you know, here we go again. You got the media all in your palm of your hand. you know, with Facebook, Instagram, all the influencers, all this stuff, and, you know, direct messaging and all that, you almost need to kind of get back away from that and do your thing. Kind of what I'm trying to do now with my life, and refocus and regenerate and pick up and move forward in a steamroller kind of fashion. You know, my bike-friendly nonprofit is going to make change. So refocusing and getting things headed in a better direction sometimes is needed at all levels of everybody's life. So that's my thought on the Netflix jinx is if you pay too much attention to it, you get caught into it. If you kind of do your thing, you know, it's kind of hard to not pay attention to it if you were in it, like I know some of the players were. Kind of hard to ignore that kind of stuff. But anyway, that's my take on that. I hope any and all of you have a good day. Hope you drive safely. Don't drive distracted or drunk. Those are your choices, and I hope you get held accountable for them. Please don't do it, and keep everybody safe on this planet. Have a good day, and thanks for tuning in. When there are thousands of podcasts, I am glad you chose mine to listen to and to help raise awareness for safer streets for all to use. Have a good day, folks. Welcome to another edition of Bikes, Burpees, and Backhands. This is your host, Dave Matthews. In this edition, we'll go over a few things. First off, some student shout-outs from some of the students around where I teach. Secondly, about sharing the road. I've seen a couple of memes on a couple of social media platforms about sharing the road. Also about professional cyclists now starting to endorse the idea of using front and rear lights, even in daytime rides, and a few other topics. I hope you'll stay tuned. There are thousands of other podcasts out there, and you chose this one. I appreciate it. Please share with your friends, and let's make this bigger. Be right back.